We're talking about the impact of photojournalism today. And, you know, it's hardly original to say that we live in an increasingly visual culture. Anyone who works in news will tell you that photographs drive attention, that a great photo can propel a story or an issue from the sidelines to the center of public conversation. Large-scale photographer Edward Bertinsky is making it his life's work to jumpstart a global conversation about sustainability by photographing scarred, damaged industrial landscapes. He's a TED Prize winner, and his work is in more than 50 museum collections. Bertinsky and filmmaker Jennifer Bikewall have been working together on two documentaries. Steve Paulson talked with her about their first, filmed in China. It's called Manufactured Landscapes.
These photographs presuppose the ideal of a pristine landscape. They're kind of like the fallen world in a way. There aren't many places left in the world where you can experience pristine landscape. And when you think about how difficult it is to photograph that kind of landscape without falling into all kinds of cliches, you know, how do you do a photograph of pristine nature that is compelling and doesn't feel like you're looking at a calendar? His work certainly, I think, presupposes the fact that this landscape once existed and we are changing a lot of the shape of the Earth, of the planet, by the way that we live.
Well, it's fascinating to hear you say that. It's almost as if he has taken the old style that Ansel Adams used to do. You know, he'd go out west and do these magnificent photographs of great natural wonders, but Ed Bertinsky has done that of fantastic manufactured scenes.
Exactly. And sometimes, I mean, I've been in these landscapes with him in these contexts, and it's not easy to see the beauty there. I mean, when you see the photographs, they're stunningly beautiful. They're aesthetically very compelling, which is part of the paradox of the work, because you're looking at something that has, you know, swirls of color and is incredibly intriguing aesthetically. And when you get in closer, you realize that you're looking at garbage. You're looking at densified oil filters or, you know, billions of little electronic parts in a pile of e-waste. And then you kind of recoil at the content. And something about that reaction allows you, I think, to meditate on your own impact on the planet, what you do to the world by living in it, and the cycles of consumption and waste that we all sometimes incredibly unconsciously engage in.
I had a bit of an epiphany being lost in Pennsylvania, and I took a left turn trying to get back to the highway, and I ended up in a town called Frackville. And I got out of the car and I stood up, and it was a coal mining town, and I did a 360 turnaround, and that became one of the most surreal landscapes I'd ever seen, totally transformed by man. And that got me to go out and look at the largest industrial incursions that I could find. And that became the baseline of what I was doing.
Well, I was especially struck by some of the scenes of, I guess, what is called e-waste, recycled computers, and a huge percentage of recycled computers from around the world end up in China in these huge dumps, and they are compressed, and they are beautiful in your film and in his photographs. I mean, to me, they look like modern art, right? Sort of this kind of compressed metallic sculpture that could be hanging in a museum somewhere.
And yet, the reality of that e-waste, it is true that 50% of the world's e-waste gets shipped to China, perhaps more, but it is technically illegal there, recycling e-waste. So it's this huge underground cottage industry, and you have whole small villages and towns that are devoted to e-waste recycling, with people sitting on their porches breaking apart computers and monitors, and of course all of the toxic metals that are used in the process of making these things simply leach into the groundwater and into the ground, to the point where in some places the water is so contaminated they have to have water shipped in. So there's this huge problem with how we deal with things after we throw them away. And there's something about these photographs that allow you to witness the places that you are responsible for but would never normally see. And I think once you see these places, once you are in these places, it's impossible not to have your consciousness changed.
At one point I was shooting a mine, and it was a silver mine.
Okay, it's a little dark.
I arrive in my car, made out of iron, you know, filled with gas. I pull out a metal tripod and grab film that's loaded with silver and start taking pictures. So everything that I'm doing is connected to the thing I'm photographing.
looking at these ships, the connection was clear. At some point, I probably filled a tank of gas from the oil that was delivered by one of these tankers.
Why did Ed Bertinsky go all the way to China to take these photographs? I mean, now presumably he could have found these kinds of manufactured landscapes in other places as well.
Well, it's interesting because when he thought about, you know, what happens when I throw this computer away, what happens to it? So he followed his computer to China. It was e-waste that started him there, just like the shipbreaking series that he did in Bangladesh came out of a thought of what happens, you know, I fill up my car with a tank of gas in my car from oil that has been shipped from a tanker somewhere. What happens to those tankers when they die? And he's recognizing that there are places in the world where these things go that nobody gets to see. And he started in China because of e-waste, but also, you know, perhaps the biggest industrial revolution in history is happening in China at the moment. And the scale of it is so much bigger than anything that has gone on before.
Can you give me some sense of that scale in China? Just how big are some of these industrial productions?
Well, I mean, when you think about it, like, this is happening so rapidly. It's happening rapidly and it's happening on a massive scale in China. So, for example, there's a place called the Yuyang Shoe Factory that has 90,000 workers, essentially.
90,000 workers in one factory?
There's a shift change three times a day. It runs 24 hours a day, so 30,000 workers change hands three times a day in shifts. And they make more shoes than any other factory in the world. What's tragic about these places is that so far, and there's no question that China knows exactly what's going on here and is trying to deal with it, but there are no real environmental regulations in these factories. That's why they're there in China and not here in North America. You can pay people less, there's lots of labor, cheap labor, and there are no environmental regulations. So all the dyes and glues and the things that are used to make these things just go right out into the waterways. And it's coming to a real crisis because of that fact. And so it's not like China doesn't know what they're doing. They're doing what every other industrialized country has done, which is, you know, industrialize now, make money, get dirty, clean up later. But they just may not have the luxury of making the same mistakes as other industrialized countries because the scale is so big. And there are already people there like Pan Yu, who is the Deputy Minister of the Environment, who is very aware of the environmental catastrophes that China faces because of this rapid industrialization. And because essentially, you know, every dirty industry from around the world has set up shop there in the last, whatever, 20 years.
Well, how do you approach the ethics of the subject that you've taken on? Because on the one hand, you are putting forward some very beautiful images. And yet, as you say, the environmental consequences are disastrous. I mean, how do you square those two things?
Well, you know, I consider myself to be a fairly environmentally aware person. And I do think that existing environmental discourses, certainly in the 1970s and 80s and 90s, I suppose, failed to move people because they were too polarizing and didactic. So there were very much this sort of us and them mentality where if you did not live in the country and become an organic farmer and make your own clothes, you were doomed, you know, ethically to failure because you were participating in an urban life or you were driving a car or anything like that or buying clothes made halfway around the world. And I think that because they were so radical, they fail to move ordinary people to change their lives. And there's something about the way that Bertinsky's photographs work, which is an invitation to witness rather than a didactic argument, an invitation to experientially feel what these places are like and then to meditate on your own place in all of this, that I think is an alternative way of shifting consciousness. And I certainly felt like that when I first saw these photographs, which is probably the main reason why I wanted to make this film. And I wanted the film to do what the photographs do, which is profoundly shift consciousness, environmental consciousness, but in a completely non-didactic way.
There are times when I have thought about my work and putting it into a more politicized environment. If I said, this is a terrible thing that we're doing to the planet, then people will either agree or disagree. By not saying what you should see, that may allow them to look at something that they never looked at and to see their world a little differently. So I think many people today sit in that uncomfortable spot where, you know, we don't necessarily want to give up what we have, but we realize what we're doing is creating problems that run deep. It's not a simple right or wrong. It needs a whole new way of thinking.
That's photographer Edward Bertinsky from the film Manufactured Landscapes. Steve Paulson talked with the director, Jennifer Beichwald.